Welcome, we are broadcasting live from the mothership. You are tuned in and listening to Starseed Energy Radio with your host Jonah Bolt. Starseed Energy Radio, where you can always tune in to hear the colors and see the music. Starseed Energy Radio goes live in 3, 2, 1.
I was born way back in 1986. I'm an old man now, but I remember how it used to be. And now my grandchildren ask me, "Granddad," they say, "can you tell us what it was like in the days of the internet? You know, before super." And I tell them, "When was that? Let me see, sometime back in the early 21st century. I remember when the internet was free. Behind my keyboard, people let me be. See, there used to be a thing called freedom of speech. We had freedom to teach each other, freedom to preach, freedom to share culture and circulate ideas without the state trying to interfere. We lost that freedom. Not freedom as in free beer, but the freedom to be free from fear. Even here in the United Kingdom, the fact that I'm from England isn't a matter that matters to our new masters and kings. I was a chap that could sing and distribute my music, and like-minded citizens could listen to it. I couldn't afford an orchestra. I was a poor performer in more ways than one. So I sought an alternate formula, reinterpreted the media around me, satirized the leaders' lies on found beats. Talk shop on top of a sample of a rock band, at least we used to, until rap got banned at the Soper Cabana, the place where Soper can ban ya. We're at the Soper Cabana, the place where Soper can ban ya. You didn't have to act twisted to get your ass blacklisted. Just annoy a big business and get fisted. They had a vested interest in Congress. If one messed with them, then there'd be one less. Our representatives never represented shit. So the internet was history, this was the end of it. I remember it like it was yesterday. I guess that day I was too lazy to investigate the escapade of another state's government. Now I'm left to pay because the covenant that they signed that day and ratified in law zipped our mouths up and took away our appetite for more. I can't do much now about the way it is, but if I could go back and change things, I'd say this.
What's up, Star fam? Thanks for tuning in. You're receiving a live transmission from Starseed Energy Radio, where you can always tune in on Friday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern to hear the colors and see the music. I'm your host, Jonah Bull. Today is Friday, March 23rd, 2012. And joining me on the show tonight, we have an amazing show lined up, as always. And I just want to give a shout-out to Isis Cove here, where we are broadcasting live in Western North Carolina at the Venus Rising Association for Transformation. And I've been here for a two-week advanced training in shamanic breath work, and I have had an amazing experience in transformation. And I am now taking the facilitator program to facilitate shamanic breath work with people. So I'm really excited about that. Check out shamanicbreathwork.org. It is an amazing, amazing program. They're traveling all over the country, all over the world, and also doing a great trip to Peru on 12-12-12. So check out shamanicbreathwork.org. And joining me on the show tonight is a health and wellness update from none other than Dr. Richard Allen Miller, teacher at Harvard, writer for Nexus Magazine, who's military intelligence for 6 years, an original Men in Black, a physicist, a writer. Check out richardallenmiller.com. We have a music artist interview with Steve Work, a.k.a. Agent 11, and that was his track we were just listening to. That was the Soper Cabana, amazing song. Wanted to open the show with that, talking about the SOPA bill that was passed not too long ago. We're going to get into some 5D galactic updates as well. And, of course, we have our favorite 3D world news update with Ryan Dernick, writer for the GCN Communications Network, and also the owner and writer for his own blog and post, which is bellweatherpost.com. And in the second half of the show, we have an amazing interview lined up. One of our biggest guests ever, we have Dr. Kent Mesplay, the presidential candidate for the Green Party, running for president in 2012. Give it up. If you can, vote Vote Kent Mez Play for 2012. And of course, don't forget, Starseed Energy Radio is brought to you in part by the domain Eco Village. The domain is an exclusive community for people with an environmental consciousness and self-sustaining spirit using a geodesic dome, solar power, rainwater. It's a self-sustaining, off-the-grid community for people who are looking to do what they can, doing more with less. The only way to go. DomainEcoVillage.com. Check it out. And, of course, always check out StarseedEnergyRadio.com for the latest news and updates. Also, you can follow me on Twitter and also my YouTube channel. We have now over 8,000 hits on one of our YouTube videos, a couple thousand on the other ones. Again, thanks for all the support out there. And just add to the Twitter feed or also my Facebook anytime. And also just a shout-out to the Galactic Federation of Light, the Star Fam out there, all the Starship Commanders, Palladians, Octorians, Andromedians, and all multiple dimensional beings of light. And a shout out to the Metatronic Councils of Light also, and all the listeners out there. We're now reaching over 75 countries. We've gone up 5 countries. We just got Jamaica logging onto the website, Serbia logging onto the website, China. I don't know how China did it because since they're so suppressed out there, but China's logging on. So shout out to them out there. All right. So first, let's jump into our first interview. We got Steve Work joining us on the show. We'll be listening to his music tracks throughout the show tonight. And I met Steve through a mutual friend of mine up in Akron, Ohio. Steve goes by the DJ name Agent 11. And Steve, thanks for joining us on the show. How you doing?
Oh, great. Thanks for having me, Jonah.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's jump into where your passion came from with music and you know, where it all started for you.
Let's see. I started out back in the grunge days, Nirvana, stuff like that. I picked up a bass and kind of got bit by the bug back when I was about 13 and kind of progressed on through jazz and, you know, a few other things in high school. Got into majoring in classical performance and composition in college and just kind of took it from there and still doing it and loving every day of it today.
Excellent. And you, like most of the artists we have on the show, you have music that speaks a lot of truth in it, your lyrics like the Sopa Cabana. Tell us just briefly, where'd that track come from, the Sopa Cabana?
That was actually a guy that I met, Dan Bull. I know a lot of people have heard of him. He does a lot of epic raps like Skyrim and stuff like that, but he does a lot of political stuff too, has a lot of great viewpoints, and he released the first track. And I just kind of got a hold of him and asked, you know, if he'd be interested in me doing another take on it. And he said, sure, go ahead. And it ended up taking off. It had got a lot of good publicity and good response from it and really helped spread the word. So I was really happy to see that, you know, I got to contribute the way, you know, a lot of other artists have gotten to over the, you know, history of music and the way it's influenced culture.
Absolutely, and that's the type of music we like to play on the show is music with intent, music that's telling a story. And the SOPA bill was just passed not too long ago talking about censorship, like the NDAA, which killed basically the Bill of Rights and stuff like that. Where do you see electronic music, your electronic DJ? How have you seen electronic music change in the last couple of years?
I think it's really started to be taken a lot more seriously, which you know, has been great to see. It's not just people jumping around on the dance floor. People are actually, you know, putting thoughtful lyrics and, you know, well thought out melodies and harmonies and stuff like that to really give the music a more full body, and really starting to take a more serious place in the music realm, it seems.
Excellent. And talking about like with events with more intent, and we've seen larger gatherings like Burning Man and things like that really popping up all over the world. What do you see what's up for 2012 and the transformation that's going on? What's your take on it?
Oh, I mean, there's definitely a huge awakening going on worldwide. You know, we're all aware of that. I think everyone's just kind of seeing how much or how tied in we are with each other and with everything around us. And, you know, it's rough for some people to kind of get the feel for. It's, you know, all of us to some extent, I'm sure. But, you know, this is definitely going to be a year of immense change across the globe, without a doubt.
Absolutely. And with that, we're thank you for coming on the show and spreading truth in your lyrics. And, you know, we'll have you back on probably later on the year. And again, just give out your information real quick where listeners can find your some of your tracks and downloads for people to listen to.
Sure, definitely. Yeah, if you go to www.soundcloud.com/agent11, AGENT11, no spaces or anything, and that's where you can usually find all my latest tracks. And you can also follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/theagent11, THEAGENT11, and you know, you'll be able to get new updates about shows and see when I'm coming to your town next.
That's what's up. Holding down Akron, Ohio, and give a shout out to my boy out there as well, my star brother. And with that, thanks for coming on the show.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Excellent. And with that, we're going to jump into some Galactic 5D updates, and we've been covering this stuff for the last few weeks now. Since March, we've been having huge, huge resignations, and last week we had up to 320 resignations, and now I am happy and proud to announce we are up to 358 resignations from world banks, CEOs, investment houses, money funds, world leaders, parliament in Germany. Germany president stepped down. And this is across the board, StarFam, all around the world. These things are really happening. We're very close. We're on the cusp of things changing. We have the Nazara program. We have all these alternative financial things ready to burst. We have even the U.S. Treasury about 2 months ago put out an article that he went to a bank and noticed all these rainbow multicolored notes, couldn't trace back where they came from, what they're doing there, and what they're for. Well, an idea of what it might be is the Nazara program. So get ready, get excited. These are the changes. These are the stuff that we're waiting for. I also talked about last week we had Timothy Geithner was arrested and released. That was reported also by a judge on Fox News. They don't talk about mainstream media. Bush Sr. also. We have the Pope announced that he is stepping down as April 15th. We also have Bill Gates also that was arrested and detained. Now, again, you're not going to find this in mainstream media, but as always, check this stuff out. Google it, YouTube it. There's plenty of information out there. If you just go to like YouTube and type in Bush Sr. arrested or anything, Bill Gates or anything like that, you will find plenty of information. And spread this stuff because this is the exciting stuff. Change is here, and it's a year of transformation. So get the real news out there. Check this stuff out for yourself. And now we're going to jump up into some health and wellness updates with our one and only Dr. Richard Allen Miller, teacher professor at Harvard University, writer for Nexus Magazine, military intelligence, physicist, and writer. And Richard, thank you so much for coming on the show. How you doing?
I've been going bald from unnatural causes.
Excellent. Well, let's jump into some health and wellness updates. What do you got for us this week?
Well, we were going to talk about pharmaceutical mushrooms, maybe.
All right, jump on into it.
Pharmaceutical mushrooms have been around for a long time, but it's only in the last 20 years that we've begun to advertise them for treatments with cancer, diabetes, and a variety of other kinds of things like AIDS, in some cases even with Lyme's disease and other kinds of viral infectious bacteria, that kind of thing. Why are they so important? Well, basically there are two basic chemistries in cordyceps. And we'll start with Cordyceps sinensis, but they're all the same, similar. There's Agaricus blazii, you know, reishi, maitake. There's a variety of different ones. I represent Aloha Medicinals, but, you know, there's so many different kinds now being studied. They're basically sugars called polysaccharides or beta-glucans. And what a polysaccharide is a very large sugar molecule that takes a long time to break down. And as it's breaking down, it releases oxygen into the body on a cellular level. And basically, cancer, as a byproduct, cannot exist in an oxygen-rich environment. Because it's oxygen, it being delivered, you know, it's like a big sugar molecule that when it breaks down, these oxygen molecules are being released inside the cell, and they create ATP, what you would call juice. It has to do with energy, and the what ATP is, adenosine triphosphate, is a small handshake enzyme that is required to start and end any kind of enzymic process. Bang, and the enzymic process starts, and then the ATP comes in again and goes bang, and it stops. And basically, ATP, adenosine triphosphate, if you look at the molecule, it's a vortex. And if you do the actual calculations, you'll find that it's a quark gluon plasma, which means this is where cold fusion occurs in the body. And it's what you would call juice, the energy that gives you that extra edge with oxygen. It was first discovered or came to the world attention when the Chinese used it as a food, legally, to win all the gold medal Olympic medals. They seemed to outperform everybody, and that was because of the use with these mushrooms. They measured their blood sugars. They measured the different levels of the mushroom in their body, and it was considered legal. And so now, performance animals like racehorses and dog racing will use cordyceps as an energy substitute. Now, what that's really about is oxygen. It isn't about speed. It isn't about libido. It's basically delivering more oxygen to your body on a cellular level. And this will regulate things like diabetes, where if you had a large blood sugar swing by eating these mushrooms, it reduces blood sugars. These are clinical tests now. Will reduce your blood sugar swings to one quarter what they were. I've seen diabetes people that were running 310 that started eating these mushrooms, and their level after eating these mushrooms never got above 105. They're amazing. The other set of chemistries in pharmaceutical mushrooms are called beta-glucans. These are also sugars, but they're unusually structured. And what makes them unusual is that they look physically like invading bacteria or viruses, but they're not. They're sugar molecules. And so the body mistakenly thinks that it's being invaded by these beta-glucans and will immediately send out NK killer cells into the body to eliminate these so-called dangerous-looking molecules. In fact, they're just basically sugar, so what basically is happening is that beta-glucans are sharpening or tuning your immune system, putting it on red alert, if you will. And as such, if you make a cocktail, let's say, out of five or six mushrooms, and they do this like Immunocyst, Full Spectrum Elements. There's a number of different manufacturers that are doing this where they'll do a broad spectrum of mushrooms in a blend. If you add transfer factor to this cocktail, what it'll do is give you that enzyme that sits in cholesterol that will sit up on top of the cell looking for similar shaped bacteria or viruses that might invade the body, and basically it acts like an antibiotic substitute. In fact, some of these mushrooms have now been used successfully in feedlots as an antibiotic substitute. Up in Skagway and Nanaimo, some studies have been done using with the salmon, and instead of using antibiotics, they'll use these pharmaceutical mushrooms as a substitute, and the fish gain protein. They get larger and better and more healthy. And so it's helping the food chain by using these kinds of mushrooms as a, you know, putting them into the food chain. I've even seen cattle and feedlots where they're using the pharmaceutical mushroom now. Now, one final thing I could say on the mushrooms that are interesting is that the Ganodermas, which are the red reishis, are currently being used for what we call bioremediation. That means that if you've been exposed to cesium-137 or strontium-90, that these mushrooms will, that's these specific brands or polysaccharides and beta-glucans, will physically go in and attach themselves to heavy metals in the body and remove them radioactively. One of the studies that we're currently doing now is that a lot of hop fields out here in the West have had Pentaphenylchlorates. The peta is what you dip a log in to make it black, and when it goes into the ground, it won't rot. And that's considered very toxic. And, of course, telephone poles and so on. So there's these fields that they wanted to clean up and remove the pentaphenylchlorates from the soil. And what they did they put in rye grass and plowed it under as a green manure and then inoculated it with these pharmaceutical mushrooms, which then would grow the mycelium and leach out the toxins. And within 1 year, several fields were certified organic. They were clean. That means we now have direction on how to use these pharmaceutical mushrooms toward cleaning up our environment.
Excellent. And where can people find out more about these mushrooms? I know you're into
I have a website, that has technical information on it at alohamedicinals.ca. I'm the Canadian representative, so rather than .com, which is the principal company, if you go to .ca, that'll be my site, because I'm their Canadian rep. And I have other products and technical information so that you can actually download literal clinical studies, see and compare what the differences are. The bottom line is the Cordyceps sinensis, which is a mushroom that grows up in Tibet, feeds off of dead insects, is now being cultivated in pharmaceutical conclaves here in the United States, where we don't have to use it as a parasite or a symbiont. And on insects. That basically why it attached to the caterpillar and some of the other insects is that it needs the DNA information on how to generate and create polysaccharides, because these mushrooms are so high up in the Himalayas, they have to rely on generating oxygen so that they can do various kinds of processes. And so their chemistry would take on the genetics of an insect, which doesn't, by the way, ever have cancer, and somehow using that information generate what we call the polysaccharides, or these oxygen molecule in the sugar that allow the mushroom to live that high up in an atmosphere and be able to still have normal oxidation processes. It's an interesting thing. What my company did was hybridize by using some diamondback rattler venom. It's a very simple chemistry. When it breaks down, we know how it breaks down very simply, and so it's often used to try to hybridize certain cultivars. That means a variation in a species, and that's why we have different kinds of reishi, for example. We have white and red reishi, and there are different cultivars or specific forms that we're looking for. This is to be distinguished differently than species like Cordyceps. Cordyceps has, I think, five basic species, including sinensis, militans, and several others. And what they're trying to do is create a cultivar that is especially high in polysaccharides, and they did it. And what we have is what we call Cordyceps sinensis, HEAA hybrid, having to do with the amount of polysaccharides, which basically is 5.4 times the total polysaccharides found in anything in nature. And this hybrid form, there's nothing like it. Even in concentrate, this just is itself is probably, and there's a technical paper on my site that, compares chromatography levels on different ratings of cordyceptin and some of the other target chemistries they're looking at. But the bottom line is that there's nothing in the world that delivers so much oxygen in such a small quantity. Coca-Cola Asia, not so much in the United States with out of Florida with Minute Maid, but in Asia, they're now using the cordyceps hybrid as a substitute to caffeine, and in all of their soft drinks. Coca-Cola hires all of it over there is using cordyceps now rather than caffeine, and it's considered healthier. And basically, if the product is put down at 40 nanometers, It is approximately 1,000 times smaller than a cell wall, which means there's 100% absorption. It's like any time you take a food of any kind, there's only a maximum of maybe a 38% absorption through the gut, and the rest of it goes out as trash. And when it's put in at 40 nanometers, which is, so small you can't even imagine it. The way they do that, by the way, is running it through a jet engine at Mach 4. It shreds the sugars right on down to the point where they're basic.
And you could also find this information on your website, richandalanmiller.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, excellent.
Yes, there's cross-references. The Cordyceps hybrid, now this is what I'm saying. This is the food I fed my Navy SEALs to make them superior. Yet, if you had to pull a three-day and you don't want to take methamphetamine or some awful chemistry, Cordyceps will get you through that day. It'll give you a loose bowel, where you have a loose stool, but it will give you that energy because the oxygen... Your body simply can't get enough oxygen. And so by substituting and taking this as a supplement, it just energizes the body better. I'm 68 years old. How do I sound?
You sound pretty good.
I feel wonderful.
With that, we got to go to break, but thank you so much. I know you could talk all day on this because there's so much information.
Yeah,
but
sorry about that, John.
No worries. I know. We love having you on because you're just so in-depth and technical. And for all the listeners out there, check out richardallanmiller.com. And you'll be on next month to give us some more health and wellness updates. So thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Always a pleasure, Jonah.
Excellent. And with that, we're going to take a quick break and listen to some more Agent 11. This next track is Music Is My Drug. Enjoy. Welcome back. You're tuning and listening to Star Sea Energy Radio. And thank you, Dr. Rich Allen Miller, again, for coming on the show. As always, a pleasure to have you on. And real quickly, just want to give a shout-out to Dr. Lewis Torrey, who came on the show last week and told all the listeners and, of course, myself that within the next few days there is going to be a huge earthquake on the Ring of Fire. And sure enough, a few days later, a 7.4 quake hits Mexico. Luckily, no one was hurt, but there was a powerful earthquake that hit down there, and it was even after 10 aftershocks, huge aftershocks. There was about 300,000 people in the south side of the capital that were without water and stuff like that, and also got some quake damage. And now joining us on the show is none other than Ryan Dernick, writer for the GCN Communications Network, and also the owner and writer of Bellwether Post. Ryan, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, Jenna?
Pretty good, thanks. Let's jump into some ERT changes. A lot going on. Talk about the 7.4 that happened, but I know there was another big 7.2. And tell us some more details. What's going on in the world today?
In Papua, Indonesia, on Tuesday, March 20th, 2012, there was an earthquake, and it occurred at 1:56 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. At the epicenter, it occurred at 2:56 on March 21st of Wednesday. And the depth was approximately 66.9 kilometers or 41.6 miles, and that is interconnected with the Ring of Fire. And again, in Osaka, Mexico, as you've alluded to previously, it was 115 miles from Acapulco at 2:02 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, or on Tuesday, March 20th, 2012, the depth was at 20 kilometers or at 12.4 miles. And the quake's magnitude, as recorded by Geological Survey, said that it was a 7.4, and the Mexican authorities reported the magnitude quake as a 7.8 initially. At least 500 homes, actually, in the southern coastal state were damaged in near the area around Acapulco, according to Governor Angel Eguirre, who told reporters. And the trembler injured at least 11 people. Mexican Interior Minister Alejandro Poer told reporters 9 of the injuries occurred in Osaka State, which borders Guerrero, and also suffered damages from the quake, he said. Along with that, 2 people were injured in Mexico City and about 200 miles from the quake's epicenter, which is surprising.
Yeah, I meant to say that no one was killed in that. I know there were some people that hurt. And what about the pluming that's been going on here in the U.S.? What can you tell us about that?
Yes, definitely. There's been a multitude of independent news sources that have been plugging away on that, and Dutch Sense has alluded to that thoroughly. Mm. You can check out his YouTube channel. But also there's been some other the Pakistan press, PAK Press, has an article on it, and they actually put all the mapping and stuff so it correlates with showing the plumes in Indiana, Arkansas, and Louisiana, as well as in western and North Carolina and western South Carolina in the highlands, that they've been showing plumes going on. Now those areas are all part of an old fault line system, the Creighton fault line, and it's just reactivating, and most people don't realize this is that it's interconnected to all the shifting that occurred last year, as we just passed the anniversary, March 11th, of one of the largest earthquakes in recorded history in Japan of 9.1, tremendous loss of life, and they're still dealing with the radioactive fallout, of course, also not only fallout in and around Japan, but also fallout and a lot of debris that is in the Pacific Ocean and should be meandering about for quite some time, because no one is really reclimating or retrieving any of the garbage out there. And so these are things to keep in mind. The other things that are coming down the pike, as I said again, the pluming has happened every evening, and it would happen right after sunset. And if you go to PAK Press, they have a really good article on it. And what will happen is that there would be pluming in the evening. All of them would plume about the same time, and then all of them would stop pluming before sunrise the following day. Now, a lot of authorities in and around the areas initially said, oh, these plumes are controlled burns, but there's no way that they all collectively go on at the same time, go off, and then there's no actual smoke or haze that would have actually been a residual vestige left in valleys and around the hills. So that's a bogus claim by the powers to be, the federal government. And they're just hiding things, because if you look and you do the you connect the dots, you see that what's going on is that they have for continuity of government, an operation ready.gov last year in May of 2011. They had an operation where all the local, state, and federal emergency management were all synergized in a mock large earthquake scenario, a megaquake scenario. Now, you could call that predictive anticipatory drilling or predictive programming. Whatever you want to look at it, it does show that there's some foreboding motions going on geologically, and there's a lot of upheavals going on geologically. And aside from that earthquake, there was a 6.6 in New Guinea, Papua New Guinea, and that occurred on March 22nd, 2012 at 8:15:05 a.m. at the epicenter, or 6:15:05 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The depth was 105.9 kilometers or 65.8 miles. And as a point of reference, it was approximately 1,534 miles north-northwest of Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. now we also have a 5.6 that has recently occurred in southern Australia. So again, the plates are tugging on one another. There's a lot of tension that is building in and around the Ring of Fire, as was alluded to by Dr. Lewis Torrey. So on to other news and economic news. AP Reuters economic recovery, as they say, on Friday, is growing momentum, though there are some risks outlook, including a weak job market, as there's soft consumption still. And this is according to Atlanta Federal Reserve Bank President Dennis Lockhart, who said this on Friday. And then AP Reuters in Hong Kong reported, duly, that the Federal Reserve should be wary about over-committing to these other monetary policies that have served the economy well in recent past, but they could be detrimental eventually, a top of Fed official said Friday. And what they're basically alluding to is the fact that you can't keep printing out more and more money. And here's the conflict, is Bernanke alluded to that they can no longer print any more money. And Fed officials have clashed on a view of the economy on the 22nd of March. And according to Chicago AP Reuters, the gap between the Federal Reserve's dovish core and its hawkish wing was on display on Thursday, as top Fed officials would say the economy is in better shape. Federal Chairman Ben Bernanke goes and contradicts totally what they say and says he focuses predominantly on a source of weakness in the economies. So one person says everything's fine. The other person, Ben Bernanke, head of the Federal Reserve, says the sky is falling. So these contradictory messages are definitely bewildering and aggravating. And the markets closed this week. Dow Jones was up approximately 34 points to close at 13,080.73. And the S&P 500 closed up 4.33 points at 1,397. The NASDAQ closed at up 4.60 at 3,067, and gold is actually up as well. Gold is up at $1,662.
Wow.
It's up almost $20 for the end of the week, and that would be in regard to the Eurozone. The Eurozone is looking more stable, and so gold is seeming like it could be a safe bet, because it's possible by next week that we could be talking default again. And in regards to the sanctions, and impending on Iran, the mm-hmm. correlation is already injecting itself into the price of gas in form of the barrel right now. Gas at the barrel has went up at the end of the week now, closing at $1.43 up. That's approximately 1.34% up since the start of the week, and it closed at $106.78 a barrel. So you're seeing that the demand is starting to increase, and the fact that Obama has depleted a lot of our reserves. So if we have some kind of a problem, say some kind of a conflagration between Israel and Iran coming up shortly, and then you will see the price of gas go up astronomically at the pump for the smaller people like you and I that will have to pay at the pump. Because if you want to get into commodities trading, you have to foot a bill of about $50,000 and start playing that game.
Now, as you also alluded to earlier, you said that even the Earth changes, the Federal Reserve, the government doesn't want us to really know what's going on. There's big transformation
exactly.
happening on the planet, and something very important happened. We're running out of time, but really quickly, on March 16th, President Obama issued an executive order entitled National Defense Resources Preparedness Act, which was like an 8-page executive order that basically claims all food resources, your livestock, your veterinary resources,
yes.
your plant resources, even the food in your pantry. And this is a crazy executive order. It flew under the radar. It's signed, and people need to be aware of this. So real quickly, tell everyone about that.
Yes, basically what that entails, and abbreviated it's easily digested, is that's just a COG. It is a COG addition or an addendum to COG. And COG is an acronym for Continuity of Government. So in the event that anything were to happen, all of our property would be acquiesced. What you could also say is if it's basically an extension of eminent domain. And eminent domain, as we know, is if anything were to happen or arise that the government would need to seize your lands, they could do so. So you could say that is a launch pad to project and extend the powers of eminent domain beyond just your household, but also to your food, to your property, and everything else extraneous to the household. So it's a perfect evidence of us losing our Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. Illegal searches and seizures are very pervasive, as you know. When you go to TSA and go traveling, you have to constantly opt out, and I've done it a multitude of times over the summer. Other things have been going on. Solar Terrestrial Report is pretty status quo. There are no Earth-directed CMEs at this time. The geomagnetic field was quite active on March 22nd, and solar wind speed as it was recorded at the SOHO Solar Observatory ranged between 345 and 442 kilometers a second. There was a minor disturbance that was observed arriving near 1800 hours, and it caused unsettled to active conditions for the remainder of the day. Minor geomagnetic storming, but nothing really prominent right now. And the sun, as of right now, is pretty homeostatic. There's nothing too perturbing or too alarming right now in regards to solar activity. So I think we have a slight respite until we ramp back up as we're in the midst of solar cycle 24.
Actually, and that's something we've been keeping tabs on, because the solar flares take out everything, power grid, stuff like that. So it's definitely something to be aware of. We'll have articles on that. And basically, just real quickly, going back to the Obama signing this new act, basically means that the government can march onto your farm with guns, draw all your crops, your seeds, your livestock, even your farm equipment. And it's just crazy. I think they're just pumping fear into the planet because they know this transformation's happening. No worries, star famine people, because that's why we're here. They know what's going down the pipe. You have all these regulations around the world, and they know, so they're doing anything they can to scramble to pump fear into the masses. I firmly believe that. And Ryan,
exactly.
Again, thank you so much for coming on
the show. Awakening, for sure.
That's it, Star Brother. And again, check out bellwetherpost.com, where Ryan writes some amazing articles during the week. And we will talk to you next week or the week after. So thanks again for coming on the show.
All right, sounds good. I'll hear from you next week, John. You have a great night.
Excellent, Ryan. Thank you. You too. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Dr. Kent Mesplay, the 2012 presidential candidate for the Green Party. This track is Suicide is Painless from Agent 11. Enjoy. Welcome back. You're tuning to listening to Starseed Energy Radio, and now joining us on the show is Dr. Kent Mesplay, running for the Green Party presidential candidate for 2012. And Dr. Kent Mesplay, thank you so much for coming on the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on the show. I've been looking forward to this, Jonah.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on. And so just to give people a background, the Green Party what you guys stand for. One of the things is you're against corporations with donations, no lobbying, you turn down donations, stuff like that. And just to jump into it, what is your view on corporations? Are corporations real people?
Well, no, and they really ought not to be. The real problem is that there's an imbalance of power. And in politics, it's especially damaging because the people who are in a position to solve our problems don't really put their minds and their energies to work solving our problems because the money involved in politics is so corrupting. There's basically a work of legal fiction that a corporation is a person. And most people find this shocking. They think, well, a corporation can't be a person. But corporations have the legal status of people right now. And they're not just people, but they're people who can't die and people with near unlimited wealth. So the problem with this in politics is that so much of the decision-making that's done, again, isn't done because it's the best thing for the people, but it's because of the monetary influence. So in the Green Party, we take the high road. We don't accept corporate contributions or even labor contributions, no union contributions. The thing is that, as we all know, it's human nature. If someone gives you something, you want to give back. You want to share. I work as an inspector for the county of San Diego, and I'm not supposed to accept a cup of coffee if it's not available for the general public, or even a bottle of water. And the reason for that is that the person tends to feel obligated. In our current political system, it's just horrendous. I'm referring to lobbying. Lobbying is, in essence, legalized bribery, the way it's set up. So we have this revolving door of candidates in office, when they get out of office, having their sweetheart deals with businesses and then working in business and then, furthermore, influencing the people who are in office. It's a horrible, vicious cycle, and it's one that people aren't very quick to change because once they get into the system, then they don't really want to change it because they know how to work it. So, again, we really take the high road in the Green Party, and we encourage others to do the same. There's something now called a super PAC, wherein just enormous amounts of money can be raised to influence political races. And again, my name is Dr. Kent Mesplay. I'm a Green Party presidential candidate, and my website is mesplay.org. There's one S in that. I lucked out and didn't get the alternate spelling with two, M-E-S-P-L-A-Y.
And now I also understand, I talked to your assistant today, Barbara Demuro, and she was amazing. We talked for a while, and she said you're really big into sustainability, which really equals survivability, and equals into states' rights. Tell the listeners a little bit about the survivability and how that plays into sustainability and states' rights.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, the way I came about this, I've been a candidate for quite a few years. I work full-time, but I've been in the 2004 and 2008 races, and now I'm in the 2012 race. And a candidate has to think about message. How is the message going to be useful, and how is it going to reach the most people and speak in their language? There's a lot of fear. We live in a society where people really, they've kind of given up, and to a certain extent, terrorists have won and are winning when we give into fear instead of love and tolerance. And so I think, well, what can I offer as a thinking person, as someone who's reasonable? And I want to mention I also work as an emergency shelter manager for the county of San Diego. I was called to help manage a shelter during the last firestorm. So I like to talk about basic emergency preparation. That's really the first step toward being sustainable, having 5 gallons of potable water on hand. Of course, here where I'm calling from in California, there may be an earthquake anytime soon. Other places have their potential stressors. And so emergency preparation is really important. And that may get a person through, you know, 1 to maybe 3 days. After that, though, one really needs to be as sustainable as possible. And that means meeting as many of our own needs as locally as possible. Another term might be self-reliance. I'll touch on the state issue, and that is that as we go up into a larger and larger geographic and geopolitical sphere, it's still important to be as independent and sustainable as possible. We can't have perfect independence. We are interdependent. We're part of the web of life. But what we have gotten away from as a culture here in the United States is being able to look after ourselves and being able to look after our communities. With the labor economy, and of course there's a worldwide economic crisis, people are out of work and they're not able to bring the money in to purchase even necessities at a time when the very state organizations and federal, but states are very hard hit, at a time when revenues are down to fund the social safety net that can help people through rough times. So there's basically a design flaw. I like to talk about, because the economy is important and jobs are important, I like Absolutely. To talk about the importance of having a hybrid economy, namely having at the root of it sustainability, even if we have to get away from the monetary system and go to time banking with a central bank, if you will, of time accounting. In other words, if there's no money available, then what you do is you basically track volunteer hours. The importance of this being that if someone is doing work for someone who can't pay them, and then it goes into a system and is tracked, then there's reciprocity. The person would be able to, for example, purchase food based upon the time that they put in. There's also the idea of local script, having local currency, which isn't at all illegal. It's just a wonderful solution that people employ, especially in times of emergency. And this is such a time. We have a worldwide emergency, so both environmentally and with our economic systems. So we need to think beyond work to not abandon the current labor market and that model entirely, but to say here in the United States and worldwide, what is really important is that people know how to take care of themselves over as small a geographic footprint as possible, especially with the basics, water, food, shelter, energy, medicine. And then on top of that, have this free enterprise system, which unfortunately involves so much hoarding and denying of that which people really need, and is responsible for much of the environmental damage and the climatic instability. So it's kind of a tough sell to say, look, we need to look after plants and animals and communities. And some people, my rival running for the Green Party presidential nomination, is taking more of a top-down approach, proposing a big federal jobs program that relies on drastic cuts in military spending, which is a good thing, but that's not likely to happen anytime soon. And it also relies upon taxing corporations that basically don't pay taxes and that shield themselves from accountability by outsourcing, by going overseas with their operations. And there's another approach that can be taken, and this is what I've been talking about, and that's from the ground up we need to do this, to have this hybrid economy. And even if monies aren't available, that shouldn't stop us or slow us down, because quite frankly, we can't wait for government to transform, and it's been so slow in doing so. Of course, it could spontaneously happen. But what's really important is that we be the change that we are waiting for, and that at a local level we get to know our neighbors, we get to know who has the skills surrounding us that are useful not only during times of emergency, but during times of peace and stability. Many people don't think about how, you know, how things could really spiral downhill in a hurry. So hopefully I touched on a few ideas, and you can pick from what I said and
absolutely
maybe ask me to sound a little.
Sure, I agree 100%. It's you know, buying local and meeting your neighbors, and I myself have potlucks once a month just to meet my neighbors. And you know, also going back to your earlier years, you're from Papua New Guinea, and you spent the first 10 years of your life in the rainforest, living out there, being with nature. And you talked about transformation. What's your feeling on the transformation of the planet, of what's going on right now in 2012?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and I'm glad you posed it that way, because what's happening doesn't have to be violent. Of course, 2012 is just such a critical year, and it's in people's minds and hearts, and we have to be careful to, you know, not manifest something that we really don't want to see happen. So the transformation during this time is one that we are a part of, not just with our actions, but with our intent, with our prayers. And the more peaceful, the better. The more gradual, the better. Growing up in a rainforest, I am a natural-born U.S. citizen. Both of my parents were U.S. citizens at the time of my birth. I'm in the same category as John McCain, a former Republican presidential candidate who was born outside the country. And I've taken a lot of flack from some people who think I'm less than a citizen because I was born outside the borders of the United States. But I am qualified to be president, and I'm even more qualified than most candidates because I've been exposed to different cultures. In a rainforest, of course, people are very close not just to the environment and to the animals, but to spirit and to more subtle energies than we tend to recognize and acknowledge in our highly technical age. So yes, I spent the first 10 years in the eastern highlands of Papua New Guinea. I am someone with mixed European and Native American ancestry as well, and if not for my native side, I really wouldn't be running for president. It's because of my more traditional, grounded upbringing and background, that part of who I am, that I became involved politically because of a very strong dream that I had years ago. I've worked with my dreams quite a bit. I've had just about every type of dream there is, including lucid dreams, in which I was aware, you know, I'm aware at the time of dreaming and influence that. As a child, again, in a rainforest, my first experience of being in a desert was before I was actually in a desert. I had a dream that I basically got stuck in, and at the time I thought I was in Africa because I'd heard there were deserts in Africa. Later, after coming to this country, I realized it was in the southwest part of the United States. So I'm very drawn to tribal people who are not even of my own tribal ancestry. I have Blackfoot ancestry. And so because of this dream and these other compelling reasons, I've been involved politically. But even the presidency it is not really that important. It is a position of limited power. It is, of course, largely a figurehead position. I'm actually more interested in working with the United Nations or with some other body of planetary governance that isn't corrupted by corporations that actually would look out for us and would look out for those people who really have no voice. Greens stand up and speak for those who have very little voice. Indigenous people, especially worldwide, are being besieged by quote-unquote progress. It isn't progress if people lose their homeland to a dam or a hydroelectric project. It isn't progress if people lose their language, if people lose their culture in such a rapid manner that they're bewildered. I saw this
absolutely
happen when I grew up, and it's happening in other parts of the world. So the view that I take is a little more big picture. It's that, you know, again, we need to get the money out of politics, do away with lobbying, do away with the idea that a corporation is a person. I want to encourage people here in the U.S. to support something called the Move to Amend. The amend part is the Constitution, to make it clear that a corporation is not a person. When we do that, when we free up the democratic process, that really is one of the best problem-solving tools that we have. I heard Ralph Nader once say that, standing not far from me, that democracy is a wonderful problem-solving tool. The problem is we don't really have it. And so if you're someone who's listening and you think you could do a better job than the people you see in public office, by all means, register with a Green Party or with a Green affiliate. Start a Green Party if there's not one yet in your area or in your state, and run for public office. As a Green Party presidential candidate, it's really partly my job to encourage those who are running for these more local positions, because those are the ones that really matter. And I have been successful.
Absolutely.
Regard.
Yeah, one of the initiatives that I'm working on here in Asheville is I'm trying to push a self-sustainable community for the homeless. I've met with Mayor Bellamy here in Asheville, Heath Shuler, the congressman's office. I've met with several city council members. And to me, it's common sense. Why wouldn't you have a self-sustainable community for the homeless to give them education, food, clothing? We already have some of the homeless making quilts and stuff like that here at one of the local churches. That's one of the initiatives that I'm pushing myself. We're pushing a pilot program here in Asheville because self-sustainability and stuff like that is so important in the time of change and what's coming up. And I know for myself, a lot of my friends call me a healer, intuitive, stuff like that. I'm doing a two-week shamanic breath work right now. What is your stance on healing, intuitiveness, stuff like that?
Well, I don't like to talk about it right away. In part, I got a PhD in the sciences to help camouflage that side of who I am. I'm a healer. I am surrounded by people who are healers of different modalities, of different backgrounds. I've studied shamanic healing. Of course, how could I not, having been around indigenous people for so long?
Sure.
And I practice Qigong and other energy methods as well, including Kunlun Neigong, and I'm involved politically for spiritual reasons, but I don't wear that on my sleeve. I'm very concerned about the state of the planet right now. And back to, you know, I want to commend you for what you're doing. I'm reminded that really one problem is that everything is so disjoint and displaced in our current economy. I saw a man holding a sign, "We'll work for food," not too long ago. And I thought, well, how about more primary experiences? How about if this city that I was in would actually have more community gardens? Then this fellow could be out there actually literally working for food, gardening, growing food, which is an issue of self-reliance, of being more sustainable than we are. And it's also an issue of emergency preparedness, being prepared for natural and human-made disasters. And we're really not very well prepared. When I participated in debates at the Kennedy School of Government back in 2004, one of the comments I made was that it would be difficult for me to design a society that is more prone to collapse than the current one that we are in. Because if we look at what the basis of our lifestyle is, it's so rooted in consumption, in using things up, in buying and selling. And a lot of green solutions are ones that say, no, we don't need to waste so much. We don't need to live such extravagant lifestyles. We can have a good life without buying so much and using up so much. And this, you know, it's a tough sell if sold as austerity measures, but the quality of life is so much better when a person has time to connect with family and friends, when a person is out there in the garden. It's just so healing and grounding, quite literally grounding, to be out there, especially barefoot, connected with the earth, maybe in a multi-generational setting where a grandparent and child and grandchild are sharing time and being out there in nature. We need more of that. That's the hybrid part of this hybrid economy that I've been talking about, because I really don't see this economy turning around anytime soon. I do believe we're in a depression. People are not talking about it. And these little blips in economic indicators are just that. They're blips. But the overall trend has to be that we transform, because that's less shocking to more gradually move into another modality than to do it abruptly. We need to transform into living more lightly on the earth, into being more connected to family and friends, and to get away from overconsumption. If you think about it, back to the green solutions, if we had homes that were highly energy efficient, then we'd save money on utility bills. And what utility company wants to hear that? Because they're into selling whether it's fuel oil or electricity. Just on down the line, food, if we're growing our own food, agribusiness is outraged. If we're growing plants, medicinal plants, then the medical establishment does what it can to suppress that. So people are really caught because there just aren't the options. We just don't have the freedom that we could have. We're either stuck in a labor economy in which we have a job or we don't. And if we don't, we're in extremely dire straits. But we're really not supported in looking out for ourselves, in that we don't have permaculture. We can't just walk out and pick fruit that is growing along the side of the road because of rules and regulations. And we don't have ground cover that's edible. Instead, we have ivy out here in San Diego. So if we take a more integrated, holistic approach to how we live our lives, we really can live sustainably. It's a polite thing to do for future generations as well. And I think people will be happier and more connected once we do that. But instead, we have a government and a way of life that is addicted to the status quo, that is addicted to war. I mean, this talk of war with Iran is outrageous.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I look at it this way. What if we woke up and we realized one day that every nation on Earth had at least one nuclear weapon? What would we do? How would we interact as nations? Of course, some would have more than others, but you know, we just have to put war behind us, and we can do that with our current communication technologies. It's absolutely possible.
Absolutely.
And it's really incumbent upon your listeners, wherever they are, to become active. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that, unfortunately, we're going to have to end right there because we're out of time. We're running over. But definitely, I just want to mention about the Qigong. I just went to a Qigong revolution that they had here in Asheville. There was over 500 people at the Expo Center at the Radisson. And it was amazing, just the energy there and, you know, to be around those people. And everything you said tonight was right on the money. You definitely have my vote, and I'm sure all the listeners listening out there. And we'd love to have you back on the show later on this year. And good luck with everything and all the initiatives that you're doing. And thank you so much for spreading the light and love that you are.
Oh, I'd love to be on again and right back at you, Jonah. Thank you so much for being who you are and doing what you are.
Excellent. So. Thank you. And again, your website is mesplay.org. That's M-E-S-P-L-A-Y. .org.
Yes, that's correct.
Excellent, okay, Dr. Well, Kent Mesplay. Yeah, thank you so much. Excellent. And with that, great, thank you. And with that, we're going to hear one more track from Agent 11, and I will see you all, be with you all next week. Of course, check my Twitter feed, Star Sea Energy Radio, YouTube channel, Facebook. Stay connected. Stay in light and love. One by one is how we awaken. And I will see you all next week. Here's some Agent 11. Enjoy.
Someone else that I find myself.